Okay, so this talk actually has nothing to do with the work that I do at Intuit. This has to do with work that I do as a volunteer with the Southern California Linux Expo and the wireless network there. I've been a ham radio operator for 20 years now and was involved with communication and search and rescue before that, and have experience there with setting up statewide wireless networks in there. How did I get involved with Scale? Well, 2008, shortly after Scale, I went to the Linux user group meeting where some of the organizers were and talked to them about what did they do with the wireless network, why was it so lousy, cringed when they told me what they were doing and said, that's just the wrong way to do it, you don't understand. Talk to me next year and I'll help you out. 2 years later, they called me and said, oh, our vendor just backed out on us. Scale's a month away. You said you know something about this. Can you do something? And we scrambled and grabbed equipment, put it in place, and ended up finding new bottlenecks in the network that they hadn't experienced before. And so this talk is basically covering what you need to do and what you need to think about when you're going to do a wireless network for a conference and similar considerations when you're doing things for school or something like that. So start off with, why do the wireless networks always suck when you're at a conference, when you're at a dorm room or school or something like that? You know, people spend a lot of time, a lot of effort setting things up, testing it ahead of time. Then the first day of school comes and everything collapses, or your conference happens and you plan for it, you set it up. Friday, everybody arrives and it just quits working. And some people just say, well, that's Wi-Fi, that's just the way it is, because they're used to running into that everywhere. And the question is this really a fundamental problem? Well, yes and no. There are some limitations that you have to live with, and primarily it's a radio issue. You only have so many channels available, and you only have so much time on the air that you can have stations talk. But there's a lot of things that you can do, and a lot of them are counterintuitive in order to get better service for a conference. And then, do enterprise class access points solve the problem? Actually, no. They're really designed for office environments where you don't have that many users. You may have a lot of people in the office, but they're really spread out compared to the density of people that you have at a conference or a school. And a lot of the features that they have that work well and improve services when you don't have that many users, but those users are really hitting the network hard, actually make things worse when you have lots and lots of users. So the problem is, conferences have lots and lots of people in small areas. Tech conferences in particular, lots of people have lots of gadgets. At Scale this year, we had just under 2,000 people. 1,965 people, we saw 1,935 MAC addresses on the network. I actually expected it to be about 50% higher than this, but that's what the monitoring ended up showing. And we had 875 of those people connected to the network at one point in time at our peak time. And the key thing is, with a radio network, you can only have one radio transmitting on a channel at once and have things work. There's several aspects to the problem that you end up with. You have radio problems, which are the biggest ones to deal with, and you just don't have enough channels. On the 2.4 gigahertz band, you only have three usable channels to operate on. In addition, you really should not reuse a channel within about three times the range that you're trying to service. So you have the bubble that you're trying to service, that distance beside it, and then you can reuse that same channel again, basically three times that distance away. But when you only have three channels total, you can't do this. It gets worse when you have multi-story buildings, because now you have you also don't want to reuse that channel in a vertical direction as well, because the radios do talk between floors in most buildings. Another big problem you can have is what's termed the hidden transmitter problem. If you have your base station in the middle talking, and all of these radios listen before they talk to try to avoid interfering with each other. But if you have your base station in the middle and then users on each side, the base station can hear both users, but the user over on one side can't hear the user on the other side. So when they're trying to decide, can I talk, they say, yeah, I can talk, and start transmitting. And this gets into the third thing. As soon as you start transmitting, you have trashed the entire packet that the other station was sending. So it's when you're doing voice, if you get interference like that, okay, you can probably make out what they meant, even if the message is interrupted. Digital communications, the checksum fails, throw out the entire packet. Or in some cases with Wi-Fi, it sends bursts of packets at once to optimize airtime, and so you lose a whole stream of packets at once. Protocol problems as well. Wi-Fi networks assume that if you can't get through, a better way to get the message through is to talk slower. And if you're in a weak signal environment where you're a long way from a transmitter, that actually works, because the slower modes are easier to decode, and so you can you can talk many times further away at 1 megahertz than you can at 56 or 1 megabit than you can at 56 megabits. But in a high density environment, slowing down just means that you're interfering with more people, and you're broadcasting for longer, and people are interfering with you. There's also housekeeping traffic. Just, I'm alive, I want to be, do you have any traffic for me type messages. When you get up to a couple hundred laptops or mobile devices talking to one access point, you get to the point where there's not actually a lot of airtime available for actual useful traffic, because it's just everybody saying, I'm here. Then we also have network, digital network related issues. Big one that's been getting a lot of attention in the last year is buffer bloat. Basically, as device manufacturers have been building their devices, and when they run their heavy volume benchmark tests with one data stream, they put in lots and lots of buffer. Its memory is cheap. Throw more memory at it. If it gets delayed now, well, we'll send it out eventually. The trouble you run into is that, especially when there's congestion, packets can sit in the buffer long enough that by the time they finally arrive at the destination, they've timed out, and so they get resent. So you might have one packet that gets sent four or five times if you have a lot of delay, but instead of those packets getting dropped because things are congested somewhere along the way, they eventually get forwarded and eat up space in the queue and eat up airtime at the far side. So what happens when you have the collapse, when everybody shows up, is that you have the hidden transmitter problems, you have retries happen, you have people falling back to slow speeds, you have wasted packets due to buffer bloat, And all of this just pushes you over a cliff. So it's not a gradual degradation of service. It's just things are going along reasonably well, getting a little bit slower, and then it just completely collapses and nobody gets anything through. Once you see the scenario of where we're happening, where this problem is happening, the question is, what can you do to solve this? You know, one thing people say is, "Oh, we'll turn up the power." Turning up the power almost never helps. In fact, usually it hurts because now your signal is heard for longer distances, and that just it causes more interference with the next access point down the road. The other thing is, it does no good for you to be talking loud if the other person who's trying to reply to you can't talk equally loud. And as such, turning up the power on the access points when you're talking to a battery-constrained mobile device almost never helps. If you need the range, going with better antennas is almost always a better option than turning up the power with any radio system. Yeah, quick note on enterprise access points and why they don't help. They give you lots and lots of bandwidth capability in a small number of points by running multiple radios in one location. So you'll have like the Xeris access points that you see around here. Some of those have as many as 16 radios in them, and those have directional antennas, so they've got one set of radios serving this direction, one set of radios serving this direction. When you have lots of radios in one spot, you're using all the available channels in that spot, and so where do you put the next access point that's not going to interfere with that? You can't, because you're using all of those channels. The other problem is that with directional antennas, you make the hidden transmitter problem worse, because you've got this set of antennas serving this direction, this set of antennas serving this direction. Somebody here and somebody here might be hearing each other, but not hearing but the access point can't hear them, and so you end up stomping over each other. So for a very high density environment, I'm not a big fan of enterprise access points. Now, they do have some tricks that they pull by central, moving everything to a central server instead of having the brains out in the access points that can mitigate this a little bit by deciding which access point is going to reply. But in practice, as I've seen it deployed at conferences and so on, the enterprise access points don't tend to do terribly well. So when you're trying to figure out how to make this work, the first thing you've got to figure out is, what are you up against? You need to do a site survey. You need to go out to the hotel and figure out what you've got out there. There's a bunch of tools that you can do. One of the most useful is actually the most available, the Wi-Fi analyzer on a cell phone or tablet. Is one of the most useful tools to use to see what access points are actually out there. Occasionally, you'll have other devices, microwaves, wireless mics, and so on that cause interference because they're using the same band. And for that, a spectrum analyzer does a good job of showing you what signals are out there. Kismet is free software. It's got a reputation as being a hacker software, but the base software just reports what access points are, what wireless devices it sees and what signal strength you have on them. And so just having that on a laptop and walking around and seeing, okay, at this point, here's what I see around the room. At this point, here's what I see. Take an access point with you, plug it in, and then walk around the wall and see, okay, what does it do to my signal? For example, if you put an access point here and went around outside that wall, that's the permanent wall, you would probably have not a significant effect on your signal strength. On the other hand, surprisingly, if you went on the other side of this temporary wall, you would probably lose half or three-quarters of your signal strength or more. The same distance, just different wall constructions. Temporary walls tend to be a metal mesh on foam, and so they tend to block the signal a lot. So, and also, when you're going out there and doing your survey, find where are the network jacks in the room. And especially talk to the hotel, and you know, there are 20 network jacks in the room. Do they all work? Are they all live? Many of the hotels have four or five generations of wiring in the walls, and it's not surprising to find that they only have one actual usable network jack in a room. You can work around that, but you need to know it ahead of time. Fixes? First thing to do, encourage anyone who can to use 5 gigahertz. 2.4 gigahertz has three channels available. 5 gigahertz has a minimum of 8, and in some cases, you can get, there's another 10 or so that that you can make use of, depending on radar and airports and other other things in the area. But getting the available channels that 5 gigahertz give you solves more problems than anything else that you can possibly do. 2.4 gigahertz, you can only struggle along and try to do the best you can. Other fixes, use lots of access points. Those of you who know cellular networks, think microcells. In a room this size, if it was fully populated with chairs, I would probably be putting three access points in this room. Turn the power down, way, way, way down. At scale this year, we turned the power down to 4 milliwatts. Normal power on an access point is closer to 100 milliwatts. It doesn't help to do more to be talking louder than the thing that's talking to you. Your users will actually like this because with lots of access points on low power, because their devices can turn down the power on their Wi-Fi radios and save battery as well. Take advantage of things that block the signal. One of the things that blocks signals on the 2.4 gigahertz band is water. You have a lot of walking bags of water around. The access point up on the wall there, 10 feet up, is actually the wrong thing to do, because that now goes out over everybody. Put the access points down at floor level so that it's broadcasting through the crowd, and that decreases how far the signal goes, so you can put another access point closer into to it to provide provide more coverage. You do have to be careful about this, because if you go overboard on blocking things and so on, you end up creating more hidden transmitters of people who are not where you expect them to be, who can now hear both signals. Again, if with a partition that blocks most of your signal, if you have two access points on the same channel right on opposite sides of the partition, for people in the room, that works very well. But for somebody in the hallway out in front of it, they can see both of them, and you have the hidden transmitter problem again. Use it with antennas. I mentioned if you need range, it's better to use better antennas. But you need to be careful about this, because you really don't want extra range. So you don't get high gain antennas thinking that, oh, I'll blast the signal out this way. But sometimes advanced antennas are the right thing to do. When you're trying to do a three-dimensional puzzle in a multi-story building, you actually might go with high gain omnidirectional antennas, because a regular Wi-Fi antenna has a signal pattern that's very tall. a high-gain antenna flattens that signal pattern out. And so if you want to avoid access points on one floor from interfering with ones on the next floor, going with high-gain antennas can actually help you significantly. Another thing you can do with directional antennas is you can use them to so that you can put an access point here where you actually have wires for it and cover this area, but not interfere as much with stuff over on the other side, so that you can, again, reuse the channel at a closer distance than you would normally be able to do with a regular stock antenna. On the digital side, with SSIDs, you've got two basic approaches that you can do. If you use the same SSID everywhere, then users move around and switch from access point to access point, and their system will automatically use whatever access point is closest to them. If you specify a separate SSID for each access point, like I've seen at some hotels, you can connect to the one that's the best signal for you. But the problem is then, as you roam around, you keep trying to talk to that one access point, and so you run your power up and therefore are interfering with people again. So what I strongly recommend is use one SSID for 2.4 gigahertz and one SSID for 5 gigahertz, just like you see on the Usenix network here. That lets you roam freely within a band, but it lets you specify which band you're on. Some of the commercial systems claim to not need that they do band steering. And what that basically is they say, oh, I've heard this device talk on 5 gigahertz. I'm not going to answer when it talks on 2.4 gigahertz, and it'll just keep trying additional channels until it finally gets up into the 5 gigahertz range. Sometimes that works. Sometimes the device gives up before it gets up to, before it tries enough channels. Just use two SSIDs. Users are able to understand that with very little explanation, and it just works. There are some config items that you can do on the access points. Wireless isolation is a common feature on access points, and what this does is it tells the wireless access point that you're not there to provide communications from mobile device to mobile device. You're there to provide communications between the mobile device and the upstream wired network. And that means that when people do things that broadcast packets or something like that, they only go upstream. They don't go out to all the other wireless users. And that helps a lot with the congestion. There's a beacon interval that you can set of how often does the access point broadcast its location. If you lengthen that, it takes a little bit longer for devices to notice that there's something there, but it greatly reduces the amount of housekeeping traffic. A interesting trick on this is that if you run the risk of when you have lots of access points of them falling in sync with each other and all trying to broadcast at the same time. A simple trick on that is just pick a prime number for your broadcast time, and it's going to be far less likely that your access points are going to end up falling in sync. They'll occasionally broadcast at the same time, but then the next cycle they'll spread out again. If you can, disable the slower speeds on the access point. There's no purpose nowadays of letting somebody talk at 1 megabit or 11 megabit. There's almost nothing out there that is not able to talk at least 802.11g. And so if you can disable the 802.11b speeds, which are all 11 megabit and below, you just don't have somebody taking that much time to get their message across. One thing to combat buffer bloat either adjust your kernel buffers on your access points or FQ Codel queuing algorithm, which is in the latest Linux kernel releases, seems to be doing a very good job of queuing things properly without getting into the bloat situations. To save CPU on your access point, disable firewalling. If you can compile it out, it helps a lot. The connection tracking that is needed for stateful packet filtering in there actually can end up eating up a significant amount of memory on your system, and the access points tend to be very memory constrained. Set fairly short inactivity timers so that when somebody walks away from an access point, it forgets about them fairly quickly. Again, completely different from what you would do in a office environment where you have a small number of people and you want them to work, and they're relatively static, and you want everything to work as well as possible for those. In a conference, people are moving around. If you haven't heard from somebody for a minute or two, they're probably 10 feet, 50 feet down the hallway talking to a different access point. And so at this point, I've got the examples of what we set up here. When I got involved here in 2010, we were at the Westin Hotel near LAX, and this is where I ended up putting access points, and on this, and spread them out, and this worked well, and we discovered that this worked well enough to show that the real bottleneck was the upstream bandwidth, where we only had 4.5 megabit for the hotel. When we brought in extra DSL lines for the conference, the hotel just didn't have the bandwidth. But in all the years prior to this, the wireless hadn't worked well enough to show that the bottleneck was going to be the upstream bandwidth. So 2010, things didn't end up working very well. 2011, we moved to a new hotel, the Hilton by LAX, and there are two floors there. So first floor, this is the layout we had. We've got a little bit of classroom down at the bottom, and then the show floor is the area up at the top. The second floor, I laid things out this way. As sense of scale, that large room on the upper right there is about the size of this room here. So I laid things out this way using the same equipment that we had purchased for the year before. And it was flaky. It worked in some areas, it didn't work in other areas. We had 45 megabits instead of 4.5 megabits of upstream bandwidth. The hotel had said, we don't need to turn the DS3 up all the way. We've had massive conferences in here and nobody's ever used more than 10 megabits. We rolled in, pegged it, for basically the whole week. This gave us the hints of things, but it really wasn't dense enough. For 2012 this year, we doubled the number of access points in room this size. As I say, that was completely populated. I ended up with three separate access points just covering the one room. And this actually worked very well. The service was solid and reliable through the whole conference. For 2013, what we're looking at, for 2013, what we're looking at is we're basically going to double the number of access points on the show floor. It worked, but could be better. And then on the second floor, we're expanding out to take up the rest of the second floor here, And on some of this, the rooms on the new area are rather small, so I'm likely to end up turning off the 2.4 gigahertz in some of these rooms and just use them as 5 gig access points. But we're also going to be using them in some of those rooms to feed the projectors. We're adding small rooms there to use as overflow and stream the videos live from some of the other talks that get busier. In terms of equipment, 2010, you know, when I first got called on this and had 1 month to set things up, you know, I bought a bunch of the $30 Fry's 2.4 only access points and a bunch of $50 Netgear 5 gigahertz only access points. 2010, they worked reasonably well. We, you know, just used stock firmware, turned down the power, didn't have time to try to do anything else. 2011, we tried to use DDWRT on the Fry's runs. Netgear's, we couldn't run anything other than their firmware. Wasn't really happy with DDWRT. It's designed really for a home use access point, and when you start trying to manage a bunch of them and so on, it just doesn't, you know, doesn't act like a Unix system, even though it's a Unix system there. It has a huge registry, basically, of name equal value pairs that's supposed to be where all your configuration is, and no config files, no scripting, and so on. It didn't work very well. 2012, 2013, we switched over to the Netgear 3800 dual band access points, or 3700 and 3800 access points, running OpenWRT, and that worked very well for us last year. We had 30 access points in place last year, and we're adding another 20 this year, that gets managed well enough using fairly standard config management techniques. And our biggest problem has just been, in 2011, we had people unplugging or kicking out the power cords on the access points, and we didn't know about it. We didn't have sufficient monitoring in place. So, you know, we put a little bit of monitoring in place last year, ad hoc stuff with Nagios cacti and homegrown RRD tools scripts, and we're, you know, working to enhance that to give us a, you know, better picture of what's going on this year. So, hope this gave you a little bit of insight as to what you would need to do to set up a wireless network, and you know where you need to go to, what types of things to avoid. My contact information is in the paper and up here on the first page of this here. If you need to get in touch with me, feel free. Scale, owns all this equipment, and we use it one weekend a year, and so there's been talk if other conferences have needs for this sort of thing, give us a call, and we might be able to assist with the equipment and potentially even staff to help configure it. So, any questions about any of this stuff? I had not heard of that problem before. He's saying that a lot of access point or a lot of mobile gear, client gear really wants to be on channel one and won't try the other channels if it if it's able to see any signal there. I have not seen that. And in terms of the patterns of where we have had multiple access points covering things like on the show floor, we have not seen any strong bias towards channel one on it. Now, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.